What's up, guys? Welcome to another podcast episode. This one is with Sophia Harris. She gives us a great narrative of her journey from Norway to America. She is a video producer and editor. Had a great conversation with her. Enjoy. Sophia Harris, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. How are you?
I'm great. I'm excited to have this conversation with you. I definitely wanted to have like a fireside chat type vibe with you. I did some research in your background, and I'm excited to learn about Norway and the experiences in London. And I'm sure we'll talk about games and stuff later on, but welcome to the show. I'm so happy to have you.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super stoked about this.
Yeah. So tell me, take me back, Norway. Even from, I don't know, however far you want to go back, let's do it.
The origin story.
Absolutely.
Well, I guess my upbringing is kind of the classic Norwegian upbringing, kind of like middle class, in the middle. Like, I grew up, I mean, Norway is super tiny. It's like 5 million people. And so I grew up close to Oslo, but where I grew up was like a literal like forest. Like, I lived next to a field. It's kind of like in the middle of nowhere, but it was half an hour away from the city. So I like to say that I lived in the city. But yeah, I had a normal upbringing. You know, it's a peaceful community next to the forest.
Describe normal.
What is normal? I had a very, it's a very privileged upbringing, right? The kind of what Americans would think of, you know, suburban life, you know, happy families all around in our neighborhood. And, you know, school was nice. I was very lucky because I feel like my grade, the kids that I went to school with, of course, like in the middle of like, you know, middle school and stuff, while there was some bullying by high school, it was really nice. Like, it was a very nice environment where people were very open and friendly. And so, yeah, it was just a very nice time. I'm one of those people who felt like high school was good, you know, in a way. So that was it was a very nice upbringing. You know, Norway isn't exactly crime ridden. It's a very lovely place to grow up. So, you know, in that sense, I was very lucky because, you know, I had an upbringing that a lot of people would love to have. Right. And, you know, as you know, being a parent in Norway is probably one of the best places to be a parent because it's safe. You know, you feel safe in Norway. So I had a very nice upbringing, and it was a very nice place to live. And it was just, I don't know, it was just, thinking about it is very weird because, fun fact, I guess. So my mom is from Norway, but my father's from Kenya. So I grew up, you know, half black, half white, but I can't even remember a case of racism growing up, which is very, you know, I was one of the few who was a person of color, but I never felt that. And that is something that I now realize as an adult, I was very lucky not to have experienced, which is not something I experienced until I, you know, reached past high school and got out of my tiny little tight-knit community of friends and started to meet new people. That's when that sort of changed. But yeah, my upbringing was good. I grew up on video games, as a lot of other people, which I got from my older brothers. Played a lot of Tekken 3, played a lot of Spyro. Those were like my two games growing up. And then I went into, you know, GTA, Vice City, and The Sims. Like, games have always been a part of my life, games and movies. And Harry Potter. Harry Potter was a very important part of my life growing up. And then, where are we now? So I decided to go to journalism school. I took a couple of years off to just work, which is very common in Norway. A lot of people take gap years before they study. If it's 1 year or 5 years, it's like it's a very normal thing to do. So very opposite of what I think is more norm here in America, to just jump straight in. So I did that, and I went to London, where I took my bachelor's in journalism, which was, you know, some of the best years of my life. I mean, university or college, as you guys call it here, is, you know, it's a very fun time where you learn stuff and grow. And that's when I found my love back for video games. I kind of like taken a break for a few years, I guess, just to, you know, I don't know, like be 18 and, you know, I don't know, just be social and party. And, you know, because we're allowed to drink in Norway when you're 18. So, you know, it's a different vibe. And I had a college roommate who had an Xbox and Left 4 Dead. And that's when I found back for my, like, love for video games. like Left 4 Dead is still one of my favorite games of all time, just because it was such a reawakening of a passion that I kind of forgot a little bit, because, you know, there was still the sort of stigma for gaming that still sometimes still exists today. So I kind of like went away from them, and then I came back to them. And by the end of my studies, I realized maybe I should go into games journalism, because this is something I really like. It's something I'm passionate about. Same with movies. And, you know, news journalism is heavy. It's so heavy on the soul that I realized very quickly I'm not one of those people who can handle that on a daily basis, or leave it as I leave work. You know, like, I think for news journalists, you have to leave your work behind once you're done with your work. When you go home, you have to leave everything where it was. And I couldn't stop thinking about it, you know? So I decided I'm going to go into games journalism and, you know, stuff like that. So I did some stuff for Game Reactor, which is, you know, I think predominantly is European. So I started doing some stuff for them. Game reviews and news stories, and I did film reviews for a long time too. And yeah, that's, I guess, my Norway life. I had a job in commercial real estate, kind of a sidetrack from my normal, what my wished career path was, but it was still a job I learned a lot from, and it was a fun job, I guess. And but yeah, and then I came to America, as I guess, and here I am a lot of years later. So, well, I guess
if you didn't come here, I wouldn't have met you. Right?
Exactly. It's, you know, we all have our opinions on how America is right now, but it is a land of opportunity. And I think it's a place to, I don't know, find yourself is a very cheesy word, but I, for one, felt very connected to LA, even when I just went on holiday or vacation, I guess. I realized, you know, there's something here. This is like a place that feels like home, which I think is very important. I think it's when you have that feeling, it's so hard to let go of. And so I kind of knew that, like, I want to, like, Norway didn't have those opportunities for me, because Norway is so tiny, and things that are related to the arts and also to journalism to some extent aren't a lot of opportunities to do that. So I knew that, like, I wanted to go back and do some more school stuff. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go to America to do that. So I went here to study some film, and here I am.
I'm glad you're here. Me too, man.
Never been happier.
So a couple of things as you were giving me the origin story. Any lessons or any stories that stick out for you for Norway and London when you were there those times?
Like life lessons or?
Yeah life lessons and things that you've carried with you and your current experiences from those locations.
Ooh, that's a tough one. Well, I think one thing that I've learned from Norway, it's a positive and negative, I guess. So there's a thing in Norway where for example, whenever I would meet someone new in Norway, I'd say, hello, my name is Sophia, what's your name? And they would ask where I'm from, and I would say the name of my super small town outside of Oslo, which, you know, is a fairly known city. And people, I'd say 95% of the time, would always follow up with, where are you really from? And that always struck a nerve with me, because it's like, I know you're not saying this because of my Norwegian accent, because that is the most Norwegian it can be. And they wanted to know why I was a person of color, right? And right. I think that is something that has stuck with me for a long time, and this sort of the stereotype. We all have stereotypes in our heads of what we think people should look like from a certain country. And I think having had that happen for so long in my life that people don't believe me, I try not to have that kind of thing in my head when I meet new people.
Right.
I guess it's sort of it's a very weird thing where it's like, I don't know, Norway's great, but people don't realize how offensive it is to say that. Right. I would always be like, no, I'm from this town. And they're like, I could tell on their faces, they wouldn't be satisfied. And I'm like, just ask about my ancestry. Like, come on, you got this. And they never could. They were like, oh, okay. And I was like, looking at their faces like, oh, I know what you want to ask.
It's a weird question to ask.
I know. And I didn't realize until I moved to, like, England, and even here, people are like, what? People ask that? And I'm like, yeah, I didn't know it was a bad thing, but apparently having to explain why you're a person of color every time you meet someone is not normal. Mm. And that was something I didn't realize when I lived in Norway for, because I mean, like, you didn't, that was my daily, you know, that was my way of life. And it took a while before I realized, oh, see, here's the thing about LA. If I say I'm Norwegian here, people don't say, no, no, where really? They always say, oh, that's great. Or they say, oh, are your parents from there? Or what's your ancestry? Like, what's your heritage? And I'm like, that's better than where are you really from? And I'm like, it's a simple answer.
but you have to admit, Sophia, it's kind of hard to tell when people look at you if they wanted to guess.
Yeah, right? Of course. And but I think that's the kind of thing I've learned, right? Is that in the time we live in now, you know, if somebody says they're from a country, who are you to judge that or ask questions about that, right? I mean, it's you know, America is such a melting pot, I guess is the term for it. So there isn't really one look, right? But I think, but a lot of countries, like say, especially Scandinavia, even though there are people from all across the world in those countries, there still is this idea of what that person should look like. And that's a very sad thing because it eliminates a lot of other people, you know, like yes, my father's from Kenya, and that's something I'm very proud of as my heritage, but I never lived there. So for me to say I'm Kenyan would be weird because I couldn't associate that close to the culture. It's part of me, but it's not who I am, right? And it's a very
That's interesting.
It's a very almost hurtful thing when, right? You know, when people, it's easy to be like, okay, so like me, for example, you know, there are a lot of Swedish people in Venice and in, well, Los Angeles in general, but especially that Venice, Santa Monica area. And so I can kind of spot them here and there. And I do have in my head this kind of idea of what a Swedish person will look like. But sometimes I catch myself thinking, I mean, the person next to me could be Swedish too, even though they don't have blonde hair and, you know, white skin. And, you know, it's just a very, I would advise people to just be considerate about it and think for a second. Like, you know, there's sometimes you have people talking next to you. That's happened to me once where people talked, I think it was Swedish, something about me. I don't know if it was negative or positive, but I turned to them. I was like, I understand what you're saying. I'm Norwegian. They're shocked faces. You know what I mean? Like, it's don't judge people by their cover and kind of don't judge. It's I don't know. It's whenever I see people, or movies or games or wherever, just cling on to this sort of idea of what a person from a certain country would look like. Sometimes I'm like, sure. But if it's in modern day, if it takes place right now, I always like question like, well, isn't there room for other kinds of ways to look too? And I don't know if that's a life lesson, but I guess it's just something that I feel like I don't, you know, I try not to be surprised, I guess, when people say they're from a country, but my initial thought is not that I would assume that's the country they're from. I guess it's kind of the thing of, you know, I mean, it is kind of a lesson in racism, isn't it? In a weird way.
Yeah.
It's just kind of, you know, you don't have to prove anything. You can be from that country, you know, like it's, in Norway, for a lot of my life, I had to prove that I was Norwegian because people didn't believe it because I was tanner than them, right? Mm. And I shouldn't need to do that, and neither should other people. And so I try my best whenever I hear people are from a certain country, and if they immediately don't look like what I'd imagine them, I'm not going to ask why, if that makes sense. And I hope that other people might learn to do that too. So you don't have to prove where you're from all the time. But I guess that's one lesson-ish. That was a weird answer. That was a terrible answer. I love it.
Keep going.
No, you just caught me off guard.
Let me find
a more fun.
When you want to talk about Left 4 Dead, I mean, we could talk about that for like 2 minutes and then come back to this.
God. What lesson did I learn from Left 4 Dead? I think with like college, I think, a lot of people, and including myself, you know, you kind of learn that you'll never 100% know what you're doing is the correct thing to do, or that you're, I think the older you get, the more you realize nobody 100% knows what they're doing. in the big picture, like nobody's 100% sure that everything I'm doing right now is the correct thing. I know everything that will happen in the future. You know, everybody has their doubts. There's right. always some time in your point in your day or month or year where you'll be like, what the hell am I doing? And it's easy to look around and see very successful people and think they know what they're doing. Why am I not? No way. Everybody's just pretending. Everything is pretend. And I guess that's the thing I like about LA is that people pretend, but they're super honest about pretending in every, you know, shape or form. And it's cool that everybody can be insecure. And you know, yeah, the older you are, you see people, you know, when you're younger, you see people with, you know, a house and a job and a family and kids. Even they will have moments where they're like, I don't know what I'm doing. Yeah. I'm just, you're just freestyling everything I'm doing. And I think when you reach that point where you realize that, it's such a good point in your life where it's like, okay, people around me that I look up to and I think, oh my God, I wish I, you know, was as clear-minded or had this path in my life so like laid out before me. When you realize that, I would say 99% of people, they're just going with the flow and trying to make things work. And you're always this one or two or 100 things in your life that you don't know what to do with it. You don't know how to handle it. We're just going to push through. Then, you know, life becomes a lot easier. And it's easy to forget, obviously, when you're in certain situations in your life where things are uncertain. But I think it's just important to remember that, you know, you can never be 100% ready for anything. And you can never go into something thinking, or nobody will ever think, I know 100% everything I want to do and it's going to be perfect. Like that is, there's always a little hint of doubt that will either fling across the mind or stick with you throughout the night, you know?
And see that, and Sophia, yeah. You drop into gems. You guys pay attention.
I mean, it's kind of something I try to tell myself all the time. There are moments too where I'm like, what the hell am I doing? Am I doing things right? Is this going to work out? I don't know what I'm doing. You just got to throw yourself out there and think that everybody else in this room have been there or are still there. And we're all just trying to figure it out. It's like when people, like it was when people have kids, like, and they are afraid and they don't know what they're doing, but like they get through it. Like, you know, I have a lot of friends who've had kids and they seem fine, but you know, I know that they've been nervous and,
right.
You know, you have people who try and prepare for things their entire life, and you're never going to be 100%. There's always going to be, even if you are really good at letting go of fear or doubt, there's always going to be just even a millisecond of like, oh my God, what am I doing? And I think that's something I learned from college. Like I was so stressed out my first 2 years of college, so stressed. I was like, oh my God, my grades are lower now than in high school because it's a different system. And like, I was like, oh my God, I'm not a straight A student anymore. I don't know what to do. And then I came to a point where I was like, I'm tired of being stressed out about school. I am tired about trying to be good for everybody else. I'm just going to do my best and that's all I can do. And the last year I got better grades than all the other years combined. Cause just like, I let go of having to put myself on this insane, like I need to do this and this and this, even though it's out of my control, you know?
Yeah. You can get a teacher.
Yeah. You can get a teacher. Like, I mean, journalism is such a subjective thing, right? I could get a teacher who just didn't like my writing or just didn't like the film review I wrote or just didn't like the video I edited. Like it's not something that you can put a number to. Sure. If you're like studying to be a doctor, there's probably, you know, there's certain grades that will happen for a reason. But I just had to, like, in my case, leave it behind and just think, I'm just going to do my best and all I can do. And I think ever since then, I've just kind of lived on that. Like when I went back to school here in LA, after every single test, I always say I did my best and that's all I can do. I didn't say that it went good or bad. I just say I did my best. It's all I can do. And that made every test so much better than going back and like looking for the answers and seeing what I got wrong, or, you know, saying it went well and then it didn't go well. It's like, you're just doing your best. And it's all you can do. And when you start thinking like that, a lot of things get easier, I think, in all aspects of life.
I have a confession.
Uh-huh.
I did try to guess when I met you the first time.
What did you try to guess? Oh, yeah.
I was like,
everything. I think it's funny when people try and guess. Try to guess is hilarious.
I tried. I was like, but I didn't say anything.
Right? No, but nobody can guess it. It's so nobody. I mean, nobody will ever guess Norwegian with a father from Kenya. That's like impossible.
I would not.
I love people guess. It's always, here's the thing. It's always fun when people guess. I've had people who said, where are you from? Norway. And they're like, oh, what's your heritage? And I always say, guess. Because it's fun. It's hilarious. That's the way to do it. Not just say where I'm really from or are you really Norwegian? I don't understand. Like, guessing is fun. Guessing is learning about how people look different and, you know, getting a new idea.
Yeah, I just had to put it out there. I did try to guess.
That's funny. What did you want to guess?
Latina in some way.
Yeah, I get that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I get a lot of that. I've gotten a lot of Jewish. I've gotten Spanish. In Europe, it was mostly I look Spanish or Portuguese. And here it's usually South America or that I'm Jewish. Because some people think I look like Sarah Silverman. I don't see it, but
I kind of see it. I kind of see it.
I don't know. I think when I had longer hair, maybe. I once freaked out a girl in an elevator in downtown. It was like super late at night. I was at a hotel. I went into an elevator and this drunk girl was there and she turned around and her face just lit up. She was like, oh, and I won't say her like, I'm not her. She's like, oh my God, you're Sarah. And I was like, no. I started shaking my head. She's like, I love it. She like sort of worse. I'm like, I'm not Sarah Silverman. And she was like, really? And I was like, okay, have a good night. Like, it was just hilarious.
I could see that.
And another time I was at a restaurant and somebody was looking at their phone and looking at me and I glanced at their phone. They were looking at pictures of Sarah Silverman. I don't get it. I don't get it, but I don't know.
You have to. I mean, take your picture and put it next. You can kind of see. You can do cousins.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
I just don't see it. It's weird. I've never gotten it. I always thought I was not looking like anyone. Came to America. Y'all just thinking I look like Sarah Silverman. Very big compliment, but you know, I mean, I hope I meet her once so we can actually look in the mirror at the same time and be like, is this right or wrong?
Yeah.
And hopefully it will be right because she's a very, very cool lady, but you know, just to clear the air, but yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very funny thing that happens. I don't know. I don't know why. Y'all are crazy. America's crazy. People here are crazy, but I appreciate that. Yeah, y'all. I love saying y'all. It's a fun word to say.
It is.
I grew up on Britney Spears. I had to say y'all. That was like her jam back Absolutely. In the day. I miss old Britney sometimes.
She was fun.
Yeah, new Britney's living her true self, but it's like, I feel like this generation doesn't really have a Britney. Like, they have a Taylor Swift, I guess. And like, Lady Gaga's like above and beyond Britney Spears. But yeah, they didn't grow up with like the Britney and the Christina battle, you know?
That was amazing.
That was amazing. We were so lucky.
The Brandy and Monica.
Well,
were you in that?
No, not really. I think I was more, I had a very weird music taste when I was in like, I don't know, seventh grade or whatever it was, where I listened to Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera, but also listened to like Marilyn Manson and like metal, like Korn and Red Hot Chili Peppers. And
like the noisy stuff or the things that are almost audibly... unrecognizable, because I know that there's a genre for that and I don't know what it's called.
I mean, I'm from the land of black metal, so obviously I listen to a lot of black metal and a lot of stuff where now as an adult I listen to it and I'm like, that's just noise. I don't know what I was just like every other teenager. I was just angry. Oh, the world, you know, it sucks. And so I listened to just screamo and emo music and all that good stuff, which now my ears are just too old to handle. My ears are just like, oh, no, turn down the volume, please. It's too noisy. I just want to listen to some bossa nova and have a cup of coffee and enjoy the evening before I go to bed at 9 p.m. You know?
I see. You're refined. You're more refined now.
I try to be.
Okay.
Questionable, very questionable.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
You said something earlier I want to touch on, because we're off notes at this point. I got a couple of things I want to hit, and you know, within the time frame that we're trying to hit tonight. You mentioned something in relation to video, and I wanted to get your perspective on how you look at video. If you had to paint it into words, if you will, the building blocks of video editing and how we should look at
look at that as a philosophy when we're, you know, attacking an unboxing video or attacking a review video? Like, what are your thoughts on video editing as it stands today?
I mean, video editing is so many different things now, right? You have short form media, which is YouTube videos and stuff like that. You have almost like GIF videos, like a couple of seconds. So you have to capture someone, like a preview video. Then you have movie editing, which is a whole nother beast. And you have TV editing. Like, there are so many different types of editing. I think when it comes to storytelling, that could be short form too. Like, whether it is TV or movies, it's all about, you know, telling the story, putting it together. You know, the director, like, directing and shooting the movie is half the job, and the other half, where you actually create the movie, is in the editing. And so I think it's important to have patience, and I think it's important to realize that editing can make or break a lot of movies, a lot of things. Like, I would have loved to, like, gotten all the raw footage of movies like Suicide Squad, for example, and seen what I had to work with in Metal, because I remember Suicide Squad is, like, my favorite thing to hate just because it's so bad. But I wonder, I just wonder what it could have been.
So what was bad about it? Was it a long movie? I mean, was it 2.5 hours plus? Or what are we talking about?
It's shorter to say what's good. No, I'm kidding. Well, kind of. I mean, there was so much wrong with that movie. But I remember just hating all the, like, weird, like, cuts that just happened, like the little, like, trying to be edgy with Jared Leto with all these weird effects, and it was just staccato. The you know, everything was just everywhere. It was just a mess. And I think, you know, it's funny because editing, when it comes to, like, short form, like, online media, is so weird now, because there was a period of time where, you know, like, E-bombs world, that wasn't really a thing we talked about. And then you have, like, the classic YouTube jump cuts with, like, Ray William Johnson's earlier days, where, like, he would just change where he was sitting. It was, like, a weird jump cut, but he's still talking. And then you go now to, like, more cinematic edits. You have all these people, you know, Neistat and all these vloggers who spend so much energy on actual edits that it's, like, insane. It's cinematic now. You know, you have GoPros and, like, long shots and medium shots and, like, all these crazy things. It's crazy to see, but I'm happy that, you know, I get very sad when things like Bohemian Rhapsody wins Best Editing Oscars. And that's just because the Oscars is weird, because sometimes Oscars feel like they don't give the award for best editing, but the most editing, you know, like, Bohemian Rhapsody is known for having a lot of cuts, and sometimes you don't need all those cuts. Cuts should be there for a reason. You're doing something with that cut, whether it is to pull someone's eye to something, or whether it is to change something, a mood, or whether it is to just be a simple, you know, conversation back and forth between two people. But every cut should have, it shouldn't just be there just to be, like, changing your eyes or changing what's happening. If, say, you have a conversation you're shooting, and the natural thing would go, you know, wide shot, and then you see the one person and the second person, and they're talking, and then you go back to the full, and you're done. Sometimes it's cooler when shots linger. Think about Inglourious Basterds, in the beginning when they're sitting down talking at the table, the camera moves around.
I got to make a note, because I didn't see that yet. In the beginning?
Oh, no! No.
I gotta wait. Hold on.
Movie.
You see, I'm doing this real time because you know I'm not playing around here.
Okay. Oh, there we go.
Real time. Okay, yeah. Go ahead. I'm listening. Keep going.
I the thing with Quentin, for example, is he's not afraid of holding a shot. And if you have good actors, if you have good dialogue or whatever it is, and a good story, not editing is almost better than editing. It's the same with 12 Years a Slave. There's a specific scene where they don't cut for, like, 20 seconds, if not maybe less, but it feels long. And the reason they don't cut is because you feel it. It tells you, you are going to look at this. And with editing, it's usually you're moving around. Your eyes change to something else, right? So it's the difference between, I want the audience to see this. I am taking your eyes and you have to watch this. That's usually what happens if you hold a shot for very long. If you're changing the shot, you're moving with whatever's happening in the story. And so sometimes the best editing is less editing, when every single cut has a purpose, whether it is seeing that somebody left something on the table, or if it's realizing where somebody's eyes are going. You know, when the edit has a purpose, especially when it comes to storytelling, as an audience, you inadvertently feel it. Same goes with like that shot in 12 Years a Slave, where like it holds you and you're like, I want to look away, but there's no cut. I have to look at this. And it's a painful shot and you feel that. And so I think if people want to go into editing, I think it's important to realize, you know, that's part of that part. With movies, it's usually taking things and comprising it together in 2 hours or whatever, how long it is. With TV, you usually have to stretch it out. Okay, so we have a lot of time. You know, like Stranger Things, for example, the story could probably be put together in less than the amount of episodes. But it's a TV show. We need to have X amount of episodes. We've got to make it long. So we have all this footage and we've got to cut in ways where it's still interesting, even though nothing might be happening, right? In movies, every scene should push the story forward. In TV, it's more lenient. You have more time. And so you can spend more time doing nothing, quote unquote. It could be a nice shot of something happening that has no purpose. But then you have like YouTube videos in short form where the important thing is to keep it short, right? Shorter videos, the better. Sure, it's like on YouTube, you know, you have either or. Either your video should be easy to digest. 5-minute video is great. Imagine like I've been on YouTube since 2008 or whatever, like super way back. And sometimes you want to digest a video, a gameplay video that's super short, short and sweet, all the highlights, I'm done. I'm done in under 10 minutes. Or it's like, I want to see a 20-minute long, almost documentary style, whatever it is. Right. And, you know, I think it's for people in that space, it's deciding which one. It's easy to think, I want to go past the 10-minute mark because of the ads. But then it's like, what are you putting in there? You know? So it's a very interesting situation, I guess, especially with online video, where now it's edits are for entertainment, like say the jump cutting in vlogs or in like just normal like person talking to a camera edits. But then you also have like gameplay videos where people, you know, mess around with zooming in on faces and zooming in on characters and, you know, doing that fun stuff. And it's a fun way. It's like you're entertaining people with your edits. So I guess what you have to come down to is, do you want to entertain people with your edits? Kind of like zooming in on something funny or doing a super close up because it's funny. And then like another, do you want to tell a story? Kind of like what you do in movies, where sometimes less editing is better and sometimes more editing. It depends on exactly, you know, I would say less editing, you know, a long shot of Tom Hanks and Saving Private Ryan running on that beach. Imagine if that was cut 100 times, it wouldn't feel as intense as you being with him and seeing everything, right? And then you have TV, which is also completely different, where people need, you know, people usually have more, you know, talking to each other face to face, and you have scenes where you just have to cut to make it longer, to make it fit, you know, right. Fit a certain time frame. Your studio says they want 10 episodes, so you got to figure a way out how to do that. And
right.
If that's cutting to random crap, then that's the way you have to do it. Just, you know. Long answer there, but
no, I love it.
That would be my philosophy for sure. Yeah.
Okay. Would you re-edit Fifth Element in any way, shape, or form?
No, that movie's perfect. Oh, never. That's perfect. I literally wore a t-shirt with that yesterday. No, that's one of my favorite films of all time. So definitely not. No, I think that movie is perfect in its errors, its flaws. It's just a good movie, man. It's such a good time. It's a feel good sci-fi. I love the world building in it. I love when world building doesn't have to, you don't have to have everything like exposition doesn't matter in this movie. Like we are seeing everything, which is the way the movies should be. The drive-through McDonald's, how it's changed, like how the shape of the M is, and the fact that the women wear these horrible uniforms and that, you know, you fly through, like all those things tell a story about how the world is without having to say, we live in a future world where, you know, things are automated, like just show it. And that's what I love about Fifth Element. It doesn't have to explain everything just because you can see it. And that's something that, you know, he's really good at. And, you know, so no, definitely not. I think most of my favorite movies I wouldn't touch just because just illegal
it's
to touch.
It's illegal to touch?
Absolutely. Some movies, even though you would think they need to change this and that. Like, I love critiquing movies. I've always done that. But I also know that I overthink and overcritique movies. Even if I like a movie, the first thing I might say leaving the theater is, oh, I wish I had changed, whatever. Like, I wish I had done this and that. But if you're entertained for 2 hours, if time goes by fast, if you're having fun, who cares what all the small little things? Like, we can sit and nitpick about, you know, continuity error or weird, you know, scenes. We could talk about Game of Thrones and a coffee cup. In the end, who cares? I mean, Game of Thrones is a whole nother beast. Mm. But, you know, the fact that we are looking for errors all makes me feel bad for all the hundreds of people who work on these things. I'm like, if it was fun and entertaining, I'm not going to try and, you know, fix it, I guess.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. You said something recently on Twitter, and I'm going to paraphrase because I don't have it in front of me purposefully, uh-huh. because I want to have this, you know, organic conversation. You said something in relation to you're not sure what you want to talk about on social media as it relates to, you know, different, you know, subject matters. And you asked your followers, what do you think I should talk about?
So
how do you feel about that now? Like, in terms of how you're going to be approaching social media, whether it's Instagram or Twitter, in terms of the conversations that you want to have on that platform?
Well, Instagram, I've never been super active on, and I don't think I will be. I just think Instagram has mentally, for me personally, it's not a healthy space, I think. I so easily end up sitting and scrolling and inadvertently just comparing myself to all the people I see. And I think that's a lot of other people too. Well, I think it's something, I mean, you do. I think you see all these pictures of beautiful people in whatever paradise they're in. You know, it's this whole thing that's happened where I always think that Facebook and Instagram more so, is where people come to either brag or pretend that their life is perfect and beautiful. But then you go to Twitter and that's where the real feelings come out. And we're all just really sad and upset about what's happening in the world. And both of those things, good and bad, right? But I don't know. I don't like how Instagram is just, it's just perfect. You know what I mean? Like, everything is just, you don't see a lot of people, especially not like celebrities and stuff, posting a normal picture of myself, and it's not fixed. It's not whatever. And, you know, I just think it's so easy to just feel crap about yourself when you constantly, it's kind of like Instagram has become the new fashion magazine, right? Back in the day, I remember, you know, as a young teenage girl reading fashion magazines, I would feel, you know, ugly. I'd feel fat. I'd feel all these things because these magazines tell you that this is what society.
And none of those things are true, by the way.
I know. But like, it's, I guess that's sort of like growing up as a woman thing, I think. More, obviously, there are also men involved in this and gender nonconforming people. But I think it's like, you just, you know, I grew up in the 90s, and supermodels were a thing. And, you know, so you grown up with, you know, looking on TV and not recognizing yourself and realizing these are the people that are given value of beauty, right? These are the people who have what society considers, you know, in the early 90s, you had, you know, the very, very skinny models. And then you cut to now and you have like the Kardashians. That's the way you're supposed to look. Quote unquote, supposed to look, right?
Right.
And so, you know, I just, there came a point in my life where I stopped reading fashion magazines because they make you feel ugly. They make you feel like you don't have the good enough clothes. You don't look good enough. You need to fix this and that, and top tips to make him like you. And here's how you dress for a date night out. Like, it's just messing with your head. And I think especially young people should just stay away from it. And I think it's the same on Instagram now. You have Instagram where it used to be, I'm going to share a picture of myself on vacation. And then it became, I'm going to share, you know, a nice picture of myself, whatever. And now you have models having videos about like what they eat in a day on Instagram. So it's become the fashion magazine. It's become a place where these people have the most subscribers and viewers, and what they say is going to be the news. It's going to spread out. It's going to be popular, right? It's what's happened with the Kardashians, right? It's like, that's the body shape that a lot of women feel like they need now. That's the type of makeup that people think is the normal makeup now. Or like, that's the, glamorous makeup you should go for. Like contouring wasn't even a thing that was a big deal, right? Like makeup trends change with the people who decide beauty. And right now we have a lot of people who are predominantly on Instagram, quote unquote, deciding what beauty should look like as like the most popular form. And so I just decided on a personal level, not just involve myself in Instagram a lot. Sure, I'll post from time to time. I captured my Neil Breen movie watching experience the other day. For those who don't know, Neil Breen makes the best worst movies of all time. Like Tommy Wiseau doesn't have anything against this dude. Like this dude's movies are so bad and it's hilarious. They are the most fun to watch. But yeah, I just think when it comes to Instagram, just it's unhealthy to sit and scroll because, you know, it depends on obviously what you're like. Obviously, I like seeing my friends do cool things.
Right.
But I don't want to press that explore button because I know don't all do that. Kinds of trash is going to happen. Like, I'll go in and look at my friends from time to time and be like, oh, it's cool. You're on vacation in whatever country. I'll like that. But I just scrolling and exploring, no way. No way. It's just like a magazine, man. You just get sucked into it. Suddenly you're looking at people's diet plans. You're looking at people selling you vitamins. And I don't know. Sure, Twitter can be exhausting sometimes because the world is exhausting right now. I think everybody agrees on that. And Twitter is like the place where we all just vent our feelings, whether it be through memes or actual like our word for word, what we feel. But at least it feels more real than going on Instagram, where the same people who might have spent their entire week saying they're going through a hard time or whatever, and then here's a lovely picture looking out on the ocean or whatever. Not saying that's necessarily a bad thing. We all have ups and downs. But I just, yeah, there's just something about Instagram where I'm just like, I need a break. So I just took a break. I uninstalled it from my phone and it feels great.
Oh, you went all out.
I uninstalled it from my phone just because I was like, I find myself just randomly sitting there without thinking about it. I was scrolling through all these pictures of makeup and this and that and all the things that are recommended to me. And like, even if I don't, indirectly, it's affecting us, in how we look at, especially like beauty standards and stuff. I think definitely it does change how we look at things because, you know, the model body has changed, which you never thought it would. Like, how does that change? It changes through stuff like that. It changes through magazines. And now it's changing through Instagram. Like the 80s supermodels were these Amazonian strong women. And then you went to the 90s where they were like heroin chic, Kate Moss, very, very skinny. And then you went suddenly to now where it's, if you're popular on Instagram, you're a model. And if you have like the Kardashian big curves, but super tiny waist, that's suddenly the model body that a lot of, you know, especially clothing companies now use. And that all comes from Instagram. And it's like, I just decided as a person who just tries to be as mentally healthy as I can, I was like, I can do better things than sit here and scroll and look at all these women and think, oh my God, I'm sitting here in my PJs and just eating ice cream and like, oh, you can't not feel bad. I was sitting here like eating candy and watching it like some behind the scenes thing of some Marvel movie and Chris Hemsworth working out. And I sat here and looked at myself and I'm like, oh my God, I'm so lazy. This dude gets up at like 4 a.m. and jogs for like 100 hours. And then he does all this stuff and it makes you feel trash. It makes you feel terrible. So I was like, you know what? I'm not going to watch it anymore. And so I didn't. And now I feel less bad about not being very active these days. I just like to enjoy myself and sit down and play The Sims for 5 hours, you know? Sometimes you just want to decorate a house.
That's right.
And not care about the world. And I've had that chance now that I deleted Instagram. And it feels incredible. Just taking a break from your phone. I can never take a break from my phone these days. It's impossible.
Right.
But taking a break from Instagram, that was a really good one. It's no regrets yet, but just wait until I get that moment where I have a good meal. You know, I have a good scene. I'll go back on Instagram and be like, look how pretty everything is.
right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, I do it myself. Like, I won't take a picture of my, you know, daily life. It's like, here I am in a car on my way to work, and my workplace looks like fine. Like, here's this street that I go to, and here's my store. You don't take pictures of that. But you know, if I see like a cool view of LA, it's going straight to Instagram. Although now I'm not sure where it will go because I deleted Instagram. So that's a challenge. I guess Twitter needs that.
Twitter
is fun now. It's very interesting now because I feel like, well, at least my timeline is half. Well, it's one third is people being very sad about the world, which for good reasons.
Can't do it. I can't do
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Sophie. And I have a third who are talking about video games, which is nice.
Yeah.
And then I have one third who are just, you know, puppies. And that's the best part. Just dog videos all day.
Mm-hmm.
I just think there should be a separate Twitter where it's just animals and pets and nice times. And that will be the one that I endorse and I stay on forever. But I do like the fact that Twitter is more real. Okay. We're angry. We're angry on Twitter.
I can't do it.
I know.
I got to mute it or unfollow at this point.
It's so hard. And it's just you have to take a breather. And I feel really like sometimes I get really sad because I see a lot of people that I either follow or that I know that are me and like, oh my God, I just feel bad of how much it's affecting them. Right. And I understand it. It's affecting me too. But it's like, I kind of tell them just sort of like, you just have to brush it off. It sounds weird and it sounds wrong, but like, just, you can't sit there and just be so down because yeah, the world feels terrible right now. It feels like everything is just falling apart.
Mm.
And especially as millennials, we're being told that, you know, we're to blame and we eat too much avocado and yada, yada, yada. At the same time, those same people, it feels like they're just tearing everything apart. And we're sitting here and we can't do it. We're on Instagram and we're looking at everything we're supposed to do. No, but it's so easy to just like, I do it too. I read Twitter and I just sit there and like stare into the beyond.
Mm.
I'm just like, oh my God, what is this planet anymore? But sometimes you just gotta laugh at it. You gotta do what I do, which is I find a clip from Ace Ventura, the second one. The first one, we pretend that doesn't exist.
Why?
Because the main joke is homophobic as hell. And so it's problematic as hell. The first one is very problematic. Because the main point of the movie is a transphobic joke.
Mm.
And so it's very problematic. I remember watching it not long ago. I was like, God, the main joke of the movie is a transphobic joke. That is insane. So I just think of the one where he goes to Africa. That's the only Ace Ventura. Because that Ace Ventura is hilarious. He goes to Africa. He's trying to save the bat. And he hates bats. And it's all great.
Right.
But there's a clip there where he goes to like meet the white dude who's like hired him. And it's a whole sequence of just pure joy. So whenever Twitter gets too hard, I'm like, time for Ace Ventura. Go find that clip. That are Friends bloopers, like two best things. Here's the life advice. You're feeling down, Ace Ventura, what is it called? When Nature Calls, I think
when
it's
nature
called.
Calls? Okay.
The second one. Just don't, the first one, it's just pretend it doesn't exist. Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls, or Friends bloopers. And you'll just forget about everything for just a minute, if that's all you have out of your day. Because we need to stay positive.
We need to.
In every aspect, even in video games, which are usually just joy and fun. But even there, we're seeing all kinds of horrible things happening.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a gotta think of the positive. Gotta keep going, I guess.
So the last episode you did was DLC, right? Or you did something in between that?
Podcast?
Yeah.
Yes, I believe so.
Okay.
I believe so. Yes.
Okay. That was a great episode, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah, that was so much fun.
I enjoyed that. I wanted to ask you about passions, right? Because I know that when it comes to our routine, whether that's Monday through Friday or Monday through Sunday, depending on the vibe, we don't necessarily get to talk about our passions openly and things that we're considering to do in the near future. Now, things that you're allowed to mention and talk about, not necessarily professionally related, but passions that you know you have that you don't necessarily share on podcasts. What are those?
Ooh, that I don't share. I mean, I have a lot of weird passions that I'm sort of into, I guess. A lot of people might not know, I'm very much into like crystals and tarot cards and those weird magical things that I like to do at night sometimes. It's kind of like my meditation. I've always liked doing yoga and meditating, and I'm not really a good meditator at all. I just can't make my head shut up. Like, it's just talking all day long. And so I found that sitting on a table with some cards and kind of looking at them and reflecting, because that's kind of what tarot cards are about. They're not going to necessarily tell you the future. And when I do it, it's more like I'm going to read these cards and see how they respond to what I'm thinking and how my life is right now. And so it's a very kind of personal, reflective thing for me. So that's what I do kind of to meditate. It's just, I pull a card, look at it and say, whatever meaning it has, some way or another, it's going to resonate. And for me, that's sort of, that's how I learn more about myself in the process and what I'm thinking and not thinking, how things are going. I know people think about tarot cards in a lot of different ways. And, there are a lot of different ways to do it. For me personally, it's a moment of reflection, I guess. It's telling me stuff I already know. But it's nice to just have a moment to just look at it and think about it,
How long have you been doing that?
Not too long. I think like a bit over a year or so. Like, I've always been into, I guess, weird, mysterious stuff. My mom was certain that we were witches in our previous lives. I have no clue why. I don't know if I believe that, but yeah, I mean, I've always been into like weird, like vampires and ghosts, like not that I believe them necessarily, but just I've always liked dark and scary things, horror movies. And,
okay. So what do you believe in?
Like spiritually?
Well, you said, in the context of some of the things that you mentioned, you said not that you believe in those things, but what does Sophia believe in today?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay.
I'm a very scientific person, okay. I guess some people would say, but I'm not overly scientific. I believe in, the power of intent.
Okay.
And I know a lot of people, especially in LA, talk about like manifesting and stuff like that. And, The Secret and, Oprah was all about that. And to some degree, I believe in stuff like that. I think it's if you set an intention and you keep reminding yourself, it's not like, if you think that I'm going to be rich, you're just going to try and think your way to being rich. Don't believe in that. But I do believe that if there's something you want or you're pursuing, I think it's a good thing to take time out of your day to believe 100% that you can do it, to set that intention that I will. And then I think once you do that automatically, your brain will start to figure out a way to get there. If that's possible. I don't believe in like a lot of these books try to sell you can manifest anything, which is wrong. I can't manifest myself $500 million because that's probably impossible for me right now. But I can manifest, wanting to get healthier I want to get better at say some game. It's setting an intention and believing in it. I think very often when people want to do a certain thing, we start thinking about how, and we focus so much on how that we don't think it's going to work somehow, if that makes sense. We start thinking about, but I don't know how to get there. But sometimes it's better to just say, I will get there. And then you start exploring it, right? It's kind of like, I want to write a book. Oh, but I don't know if I have time. I don't know how I'm going to get there. I don't know if I'm good enough. Instead of doing all that, I'm just going to sit down and see what happens. Or, I'm going to go for a walk and maybe suddenly the idea will come. If you have it in your mind that this is possible, it's possible. If that makes any sense. It's kind of like how people, like all the actors always say, believe it, you can do it. And a lot of actors always talk about this because I think when people say, I am an actor, I want to be an actor, it's very easy to think, it's such a small possibility that you will be that actor,
right?
That you will become the person on that stage winning an award. And I think that's why all these actors often say, believe in yourself, you can do this, because there is a sense of manifestation that comes in that you won't become anything unless you believe you can. And yeah, I believe, in that sense,
I believe in the power of spoken word. I believe in that.
Yeah. And it's just I think, you know, it's, you know, for me, I guess manifestation is kind of like some people pray, some people write it down. You know, I think it's just sending it out there and letting yourself, and if you have a God, letting your God know, or letting the universe know, or whatever it is you believe in, know that this is something that I want and will and I can. That's actually, just thinking about it now, that's actually something that a teacher told us in like grade school. Ooh, I'm getting like flashbacks right now. We were doing a play, I think it was, and this teacher, this was probably in like third or fourth grade, and she had us all stand up and chant, I can, I will, and I shall. And I can, I will, and I shall. And she kept us, she had us say it over and over and over again. And that, I guess, kind of stuck by me, that if you say, I can do this, I will do it, and I shall do it. It's a very powerful thing sometimes if you say it over and over again in your head, because our minds lie to us a lot. Mm. Like our heads lie to us. Like the moment your head starts talking and saying, you can't do this, you can't whatever. What if something happens? What if this happens? What if that happens? You know, that is something that we need to program our brains not to. And sometimes the way to do that is to lie. You know, it's kind of like, if you're going on a stage for the first time, you just have to tell yourself and kind of lie to your brain and think, this will be fine. Nothing bad will happen. You don't know if nothing bad will happen, but you have to tell your brain that. Otherwise, you're going to shut down, right? And I think to manifest or to pray or whatever people would feel like calling it, it's just putting that intention out there and just kind of tricking your brain in a way to thinking this will happen. Because if you don't lie to your brain sometimes, it's going to be tough. It's tough, especially now. It's kind of like nowadays saying everything will be fine. And sometimes you know that not everything is fine right now.
Right.
But in order for us mentally to just keep calm, you just have to say things will be better. Things will be good. If we all decided right now to just say, this is reality, this is what it is, then nothing will get better. We have to think. We have to lie to ourselves. It feels like lying right now because everything is falling apart. We have to lie to ourselves in whatever situation it may be and say, no, this will work. This will be good. And right, that's so, when things happen, right? So
essentially, it's a substance of things hoped for, right? The evidence of things not seen, which is really what faith is, right? So you're believing these things. Like even with this particular episode, I was like, yeah, I want to have Sophie on. I don't know if she's going to say yes or no. You know, we go through that. We still go through that. Even it doesn't matter how many episodes you recorded in the past. You always want to know if the person that you ask if they want to come on say yes, right? And we go through that, you know, anxiety. We go through, okay, what, how are we going to frame this particular show and even, you know, preparation for that particular episode and stuff like that. So I think that there's it comes with its own weight.
That was my journey to America in a way. Was I can, I will, I shall. Because when I told people, I want to go to America, I want to work in America. And, you know, the first reaction for a lot of people were positive. They were like, of course you can do this. That's your dream. You're going to achieve it. But there were people who told me, you're not good enough to get a job in America. There were people who told me, how are you going to do that? That's impossible. Mm. But I always believed that there will be a way. I told myself every day, as I was playing GTA and imagining myself in the actual real city. And, you know, that was a way of manifesting too. I'm just thinking, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. I got to stop thinking about how, because it seems so big and impossible and just complicated, and just think it will happen. It shall happen. And I can do this. And then suddenly, you know, it was like things just popped up. Just like suddenly I realized I want to go back to school. Wait a minute, why don't I go to school in America? You know, and then, you know, this, it's just this perfect thing of like, oh, and now I'm an OPT or I can work legally now. This is incredible. I did it. I'm here. I did it. And, you know, screw the people who said I couldn't, right? And so I think, you know, that was a way for me to get here, a sense of manifestation to just tell myself that this will be fine. You're going to do it. You will do it. And I shall do it. And, you know, there is a certain power to that. And I think, you know, regardless of what your beliefs are, I think it's just, you know, letting it out there to, as I said, whatever you might believe in, if it's a God, if it's the universe, if it's yourself, whatever it may be, is when you put thoughts out there and you believe in them, there's something very powerful that comes with that, where it is, you know, if it's a positive thing, if it's something that, you know, radiates in your passion, it's going to affect other people and open opportunities for you. It's kind of like a lot of those actors where they walk into a room, you're just like, oh my God, that person, they have such a passion and such, you know, not even celebrities or, you know, actors or whatever, but you have normal people. Sometimes you have a person walk through a room and it's just like, you're just immediately attracted to them. And you know that that person has put out there that I'm easy to hang out with. People want to be my friend. I'm a really good person, or whatever they might be. You know, there's something with those types of people where you just kind of feel that. It's kind of like Jim Carrey is probably one of those people where he'd walk into any award show and you just want to watch him. You just want to talk to him. You just want to see him. And I know that he's the type of guy who's talked a lot about, you know, manifestation and stuff in his life and how, you know, it's setting an intention and believing in yourself and believing in whatever it is. And I think it's so important. And, you know, especially now where, yeah, it feels like the world is against so many of us in every shape or form, whether it be politics or climate change or just student debt or whatever it may be. It's, you just have to keep that, you know, just keep lying to yourself and thinking everything is fine. I'm a good person. Telling yourself in the mirror, you know? I had a yoga teacher once who just told me to just keep telling myself, you know, I am, you know, loved. I'm open to love. I am loving and I'm strong. Like sometimes just saying those words and telling yourself that is a very powerful thing. And it could be, you know, telling you that, you know, people, I want to meet people. People want to meet me. You know, when you're honest and open about stuff like that, I think you can attract a lot of really cool things in your life. And if you're honest, if you're a good person and if you're open to it, I think a lot of things will feel like they come your way. You're working for it, but it doesn't feel like work because it's something that you are enjoying. You're enjoying the moment, the present, whatever it may be, right? It's kind of when networking doesn't feel like networking, when it's just like a conversation, you realize in retrospect, wow, that actually led to something, right? You know, that's a whole lot of rant.
Yeah. You're amazing. All right. Give me one more. Give me one more passion that you don't talk about or you haven't talked about yet on any particular podcast.
Oh my God. One more passion. That's not video games.
Not yet. We'll get to that.
Okay. A passion that's not video games. Oh yeah. My God.
Yeah.
But
you haven't mentioned yet on a podcast and you've always wanted to talk about it. And for whatever reason you had reservations.
Something I've never talked about
yet.
I don't know.
Because the tarot thing, I wasn't expecting that.
I mean, yeah, it's a fun hobby that I just kind of got into because it's a nice private thing to do, you know? Sometimes you need something to do by yourself. And, you know, I've always been in the sense of like, yeah, stuff. A lot of, you know, it's nice when you, I don't know. It's a thing that I believe in and I have a lot that helps me as a person. And I think it's the same with every other faith and belief and way of life, is as long as it's not hurting anybody or causing people harm, and as long as people aren't pushing it on other people, then it's a positive and beautiful thing if it does you good as a person. And I think, I don't know, playing with some weird cards makes me happy. So I'm going to continue doing that. Another passion of mine, I don't know.
You don't know? How do you not know? That you haven't talked about. For whatever reason, you just didn't say anything about it yet, or you were just, you know, doing your own thing and chilling out.
I like to talk, obviously.
I didn't get that. I didn't get that at all.
I feel like I've talked about most things in my life. What am I passionate about? It's such a weird word because when I think about what I'm passionate about, sometimes it gives me the idea that it has to be something that I'm doing all the time or thinking about all the time, but it doesn't, does it? But I think it's like in our society right now, like if you say I'm passionate about something, it's like, oh, so what are you doing about it or whatever, right? Like there are things that I like, but I don't do it all the time. Maybe.
Okay, so let's throw a couple of things out. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Let's see. Coffee.
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
I'm trying to cut down.
Okay.
Cutting down on coffee because I drink a lot of Coke, so I have to like balance it out. One caffeine drink per day. So now it's iced tea, but yeah, cutting it out, but enjoy it once in a while.
Okay.
So not a passion, I would say.
Okay. Pizza.
Love pizza. But I'm not a big cheese fan, which is complicated because that's the main ingredient, but kind of. Eat it from time to time.
Okay.
Yeah. And I do like pineapple on my pizza.
That was my next question. You're amazing.
Yeah.
You see that?
Pineapple is the best thing. Here's the thing. I love Gordon Ramsay so much. I love watching Hell's Kitchen and MasterChef and all those programs, even though I don't cook. But when he said that he didn't like pineapple on pizza, that broke my heart because that's my favorite thing to put on the pizza. So pro pineapple in this house.
I like that.
Absolutely.
I like that. Okay. So when you're not gaming, you're not doing anything video related or journalism related. What are you doing recreationally that you're passionate about?
That's not video games. Oh no. I was going to say like every day now, like every night after I had dinner, I've literally just played The Sims and built houses in The Sims all day. That's literally what like my favorite pastime is these days, just to build stuff in The Sims, which is, you know, my passion would have possibly been like home decor.
Okay.
If I had money and an apartment that wasn't the size of like Harry Potter's closet under the stairs, that would have probably been a passion. But what I do besides that, I mean, I see a lot of movies. Movies have always been a big passion.
Sweet.
I do some photography. It's been a while now since I've done it. But
what
it's
camera?
I have a 60D, which I got way back when I thought I would be a vlogger because it has that cool flip screen so you can see yourself. But yeah, no, I love taking photos, but it's just finding the place and time for it, obviously. But I do like photography and I like doing nature photography or like people, and I like it to be supernatural because I'm very anti Photoshop and stuff like that. And
I
fake
see that.
Lighting
you
stuff.
Could tell,
yeah.
You could tell by Instagram, you're not really into that stuff.
Yeah. I like things that are supernatural. You can change the colors and stuff, but I don't like studio shooting, I guess is the way to say it. And I just like going to the beach and seeing something pretty and just snapping that. And it's pretty, even though it's not perfect, I guess.
So
but yeah.
I could be wrong on this. Like when you did the thing with the hands, was that LA on your Instagram thing? Is that what that was?
Oh my God. Your research is so funny. How do you?
I'm just saying.
That was funny because that was when I first came here. When I studied at Santa Monica, I came with a group of Norwegian people, and it was kind of like part of this thing in Norway that helps students travel to America, basically. And so we were doing this like group activity. And one of the things we had to do was take a photo where somebody does that. And I was like, I want it to look nice. So it's not going to be just a random person. So I tried to set it up and make it fancy, I guess. Yeah.
That was cool. So. I like that. I dig it.
Thank you. That's such a funny thing that you saw that. You've done your research. That's crazy. That's so funny.
Why is that funny? I don't understand. I think that's what you're supposed to do, right?
I don't know. I don't know if there's something. Maybe. I don't know. I feel very humbled, I guess.
Aww.
And like, I don't feel worthy of being researched.
Yeah, you should feel that. Absolutely.
Well, I know.
So we got one down for passions. I'm going to jump into something I believe that you can run with, okay?
Okay.
This is journalistic integrity. What does mean to you in the current landscape of whether it's video game news reporting or any kind of reporting that you've seen or things that you're kind of lightly paying attention to or not necessarily paying attention to as it relates to news?
Well, journalism is weird, especially, I mean, obviously, video game journalism is what I know the most, what I've professionally been in. And especially video game journalism is weird now because it's not what it used to be 5-6 years ago. 5-6 years ago, you worked in a newspaper or an online publication. Now people who are YouTubers can call themselves a games journalist. You know what I mean? Like everybody seems to be a games journalist, E3 was just people from the press. And now it is content creators and bloggers and all kinds of different people. And so I think when it comes to, you know, video game journalism, the term has kind of died, I think, unfortunately. Or what a journalist used to be has kind of faded, for better or worse. I think it's a positive and a negative. I think it's a very weird place now where, you know, it's not a, I guess, quote unquote, protected role. If you know what I mean, like a news journalist, you kind of know what that is. That's a person who works for a newspaper or a TV or whatever, and they go report on the news and they have a media badge. And it's a very, but a video game journalist, is it somebody who critiques a game? Well, Twitch people critique games and podcasters and YouTubers and bloggers. And it's a very weird title because it's not just reporting on the news. Not saying there aren't incredible games journalists. Like, you have incredible games journalists who have written incredible pieces, you know, people from, you know, IGN or Kotaku, you know, so many important pieces have come out this year, you know, especially, I mean, a piece that I think will stick with me for a long time is the piece about Riot and about, you know, how women are treated at Riot that came out a while ago. Like, stuff like that is so important. And those are like, I mean, I would call them true games journalists, but that is the thing. Like, what is that anymore? Because the term is very weird now and it's kind of changed a little bit. But I think, you know, journalism integrity, like, it's also difficult now because back in the day, journalism integrity, like, a part of that, like, journalistic integrity, a part of it is, you know, being objective. I think it's a lot of people's opinion of it. It has to be objective. No subjective opinions involved. You're reporting the facts. End of story. But I think in certain cases, if you think about news, for example, there are people who are sitting on those tables or writing for whatever papers who have so much knowledge in certain areas. Knowledge that I can never even half of it have, because these people are experts in what they're doing. I want them to give their expert opinions, right? I want to hear what is their analysis, because my analysis, I don't have all the facts. I don't have all the history. You know, you have people like Christiane Amanpour, who reports from a foreign country. She's been there. She sees things. I don't want her to be objective. I want her to use what she has of knowledge to say, this is what the situation is, right? And so I think it's a weird spot right now where we can't be fully objective, but it's about being factual. You know, I think it's about checking, double, triple checking things. I think it's so important to triple check. You know, it's so easy now too. We have Google. It's so easy to check things and make sure that you're, you know, saying, you know, using the right names or the right years or whatever it may be. That is an important thing. I think it's such a, you know, well, we talk a lot about video, like ethics in games journalism. And, you know, the it's kind of been turned into a joke right now. Like, right now it's like a meme. But, you know, I do think that it is, in the end, when you go to journalism school, you know, ethics is such a huge part of it. Like, we had it in our school, we had an entire class just dedicated to that. We just talked about that. We had another class just about law for journalism. Learning the laws of what we can and can't do and how we should present things, and, you know, trust and truthfulness and, you know, accountability and all those things, I think, are still important. But I think right now we're at a point where the name journalist, the profession, the, you know, choosing that for yourself as your title is so much more loose now. And so a lot of people who don't necessarily do classic traditional journalism, whether it be writing an article or, you know, doing a news broadcast, can call themselves journalists now. And so when I hear journalistic integrity, it's weird for me because it means so much now. Like, you can watch somebody inadvertently or like indirectly review a game by playing it on YouTube or Twitch. And they are reviewing it if they're like saying what they think, and, you know, it's a first, you know, impressions. Are they objective? Probably not. It's a subjective thing, how you like a game or not. But, you know, there are people like that, which I go to see how they will review a game, what they think about it. I enjoy their subjective opinion because I know that they have, you know, reasons for it, and they have facts that, you know, like facts, but, you know, if they've played the first and second installment of a game and this is the third one, I want to hear their opinion because I know that they've played the two previous ones, you know? And so it's a weird term because I think it's changed in, you know, which journalistic sphere you're in. I think when it comes to traditional news journalism, objectivity, you know, being truthful, trustworthy, accountable, you know, fact-checking, all those like classic things you think about are so important. But I think video game journalism and film journalism, it's changed now. It's a more subjective, personal thing. You have personalities you want to hear, you know. If you want to be a games journalist, part of it almost in a lot of cases is having a personality. Like you're having your own way of presenting how you think about games or what you feel and what your favorite games are. And, you know, you have some people who like certain games, some people who don't. And it's a weird place where, you know, it's such a subjective thing that you should be allowed to be subjective. But also, I mean, I would say in that those cases, if you want to be a journalist in those things, maybe see if your role can be adapted in a way, you know, like I would never want to review a From Software game, for example, because it's not my cup of tea. I'm really bad at Bloodborne and like, I'm just bad at the game. Sekiro, I can't.
And all those guys.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I'm bad at the game. I think they're beautiful. There's a dog howling outside my window right now.
That's
he completely
funny.
Disagrees. He's like, excuse me. But I guess the point is like, I love those games. I understand why, you know, I realize they are pieces of art that I would want to give a high rating, but it wouldn't be truthful for me to give it a 10 out of 10 because I can't play it because right. I'm so bad. It will take me 2 hours to get by the first guy because my brain doesn't think like that, right? And it's the same as if you put those people to play The Sims, which I love. They might not have a good time with that. But I think when it comes to stuff like games journalism, I'd rather have people be truthful about what their subjective taste is. You know, when I read a review, I want to read why they don't like certain things or why they like it. Like, I love a review where it says, you know, or if it's not just a written review of somebody talking, if I know that, you know, this is a person who plays The Sims every day, Sims expansion pack. Like, I know that they know what they're talking about. And I know that they love The Sims. They've played everything else. I trust their opinion on it. And I know, like, say, for example, if it's some YouTuber, I'll be like, well, I know that they don't like this and this pack. So I know that if I don't like those, maybe I won't like this one. Or, you know, if there are certain journalists who can go back and look at what game scores they gave, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's, you know, you can give an objective score on a game when it comes to mechanics and storytelling and, you know, voice acting, whatever it is. But at the end of the day, there's going to be a tiny part of it that's going to be so subjective. And I would rather the people that I read, the games journalists, if it's game reviews we're talking about, be honest about why something was detracted from whatever score it is or why it was so positive, if you know what I mean. I love reading reviews where there's some personality, whether it is as a fan of X games, just putting that, like, as a fan of the GTA 5 was X blah 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 blah, just that little thing makes me realize this is a fan,
right?
So I already know where he's coming from. Or if he says, as a fan, GTA 5 was bad or whatever, I'd be like, oh, well, again, I know where he's coming from. It's not just somebody who has no relationship to whatever they're talking about. This is someone who loves something, for example. And so I think in games journalism, that is part of it, especially when it comes to reviews. I love personality because I want to know what kind of person is reviewing this, and I'll appreciate whatever score they're given. Instead of trying to be, this game is objectively bad or objectively good. It's like, that doesn't exist. It's video games. It's the same as reading a book. Some people will, like, I like the Da Vinci Code, but half the world will hate the Da Vinci Code. I thought the Da Vinci Code was pretty fun, but apparently a lot of people hate it. That's the way you do with entertainment. And so, you know, it's easier for a film review, I think, to be objective because there are certain things you can look at, technical things. Like, you know, cinematography or editing, acting, music, like there are a lot of technical things that you can very easily say, this is good and this is bad. You know, I wasn't a big fan of, like, Titanic isn't my favorite movie, but I get that it's a great movie because technically it's incredible, right? I mean, it's here's the thing. I appreciate Titanic. Titanic is a great movie. I'm not a big romance person, so obviously I didn't like that part. But I wouldn't say, oh, it's a 2 out of 10 because I don't like romance. I would be like, technically, look at it. It's spectacular, right? Mm. But in games, it's such a personal experience because you're playing it. You're being the characters. You're choosing what you want to see and not see in certain worlds. If it's an open world game, you're choosing what to emphasize and not. It's so hard to get rid of that subjective voice that I would rather have a reviewer who's honest about those things than somebody saying objectively whatever, because, you know, the objective parts, mechanics and, you know, all that stuff only go so far in a game review, because you're interacting so directly to it that there needs to be some sort of subjectivity in that kind of journalism. I think, whilst, yeah, if you're reviewing, it's the same with music, there is some hint of subjectivity that needs to be involved, because you can't just say, oh, the instruments were great. Well, you know, the composition was nice, but it's like, well, there is something in you that says this is nice to listen to or not, you know?
Okay, so before this question leaves me, so you don't do any romance movies at all? I'm reading a lot into what you said, so I just want to go there before I forget.
This is I have a very unpopular opinion, and two of my most unpopular is I don't like romance movies and I don't like animated movies. Very unpopular opinion.
I just want to understand. Do you mean like you don't like Batman Hush or you don't like the Lion King?
I mean, I loved Spider-Verse.
But I
don't usually watch those movies anymore, and I don't like them.
Okay.
I have no interest in seeing Frozen or Inside Out or whatever they may be. No interest. I only watch Spider-Man because everybody kept telling me you have to watch it, and I loved it.
Okay.
But most, like, the things I grew up with, obviously, like the Lion King, the classic Lion King, I'm not going to say, that's, like, my jam.
Right.
I mean, it's part of me. It's in Kenya. Like, they speaking Swahili. It's part of my heritage.
You are an interesting individual. I tell you that. I love it.
I appreciate that, but it's so unpopular. People just scold at you if I say I don't want to watch it because it's animated. People are like,
so oh, why? God. Well, why is that?
I don't know. I think it's just something that I like movies to be just humans. I don't know what it is. There's just something I am more attracted. I like Muppet Treasure Island is a fun movie, but it's Muppets and people.
Mm.
I don't know if it's just something where I can't connect in a way.
Space Jam?
Just have no interest. Space Jam is awesome. Space Jam is great. I love Space Jam.
Woo, I thought I lost you there for a second.
No. Space Jam. But again, it has people in it.
Right.
I like The Incredibles. That was like a once in a thing where I was like, oh my God, this movie's great.
Yeah.
But there's just something about animated movies that is just not appealing. I'd rather watch human beings. Mm. And I don't know why. I love the things I grew up with. Did not like the princesses at all, except for Mulan maybe. But you know, the Lion King and Dalmatians, 101 Dalmatians was fun, you know, stuff like that. But yeah, I don't know what it is. It's just a personal opinion, and people, whenever I say it, shocked. I've had gasps and you're a terrible person. How can you not like this? And I don't know what to say, man. I like animated games. It's just something where I can't connect to it on a personal level for some reason. I don't know what it is. I just have no interest in watching, well, now computer animated stuff. And I feel terrible about it. And I wish I could change it. I just don't have fun. And so I'm not going to actively pursue it. It's like Toy Story. I like Toy Story, the original, because I was a kid when it came out and I had fun with it. I have no interest in Toy Story 4. I love Keanu Reeves, but like, I'd rather watch him in John Wick, I guess.
That's fair.
I've like lost if like, I know people hate me for that. I don't know what it is.
People hate me for
like not liking anime. I can't change it. It's just the way it is.
That's all right. So you mentioned Left 4 Dead. Okay.
Uh-huh.
You mentioned Sims. But you didn't mention Overwatch yet.
Oh my God, Overwatch. Yeah, that's...
So let's go into that.
Ooh, Overwatch. I watched Overwatch League earlier. That's the one esport that I follow is Overwatch League. I did follow a little bit of the Call of Duty too. Those are probably my two esports that I follow. But Overwatch League especially. I don't know what it was. It's funny because when I started playing Overwatch, I thought it was... It's funny because without even realizing it, I think I gravitated towards that game, not just because it was fun, but because of the character and the diversity in the character gallery, because that's something I've never seen. And I didn't realize that until I was well into playing it and thinking, wow, I'm actually doing this. I'm attracted to these characters because, you know, in some way or another, they look like me, right? Pharah is half Egyptian, half Native American. To have a mixed race character in the game, I can't even think of another character that I've seen that before. The first character that actually pulled me in was Sombra. And I, you know, without thinking about it subconsciously, I think I was attracted to it because that's someone who kind of looks like me. She's a brown skinned woman with, you know, I was just kind of immediately pulled into it. And then I saw her mechanics. I'm like, that's awesome. I want to hack people. That sounds great. And I realized, you know, it's a fun team shooter, and I'm all about team like co-op work. I don't like battle royales at all, so this was like the perfect game for me. But now looking at it, like it's just so nice to see all these different nationalities and races come together. Not just races, but nationalities too, and have actors who are from those places. And just it was just so nice to see all these different characters with all different skin colors and nationalities come together. It was just beautiful, and it still is beautiful. And now, you know, we've got different sexualities in there too. Like, it's great. It's so good. And, you know, it's something that I never had the chance to see as a kid growing up, you know, throughout my entire life. Not necessarily a bad thing, but I, you know, my heroes, the characters that I got inspired by and looked up to were all white boys, right? Harry Potter was my idol and still is. Harry Potter's still a very important part of my life, who I grew up with and, you know, taught me things as a young person. And whilst I love Harry Potter and he always will be, you know, looking back, I wish that as a kid, I had somebody who looked like me that I could grow up with too, that I could be thinking, oh, this is good. This is good. Instead of wanting to straighten my hair, I should look at someone and think that's great, right? So it's like, I'm so happy that young girls especially are growing up with Wonder Woman and, you know, Black Panther, and seeing all these women in this certain way that I never, you know, I can only speak from my personal experience, right? And, you know, growing up as a young girl, it, like, I'm so happy that people get to grow up with this. And I'm so happy that young people will grow up with Overwatch and be able to play all these different characters from around the world. And there is a character that might even look like, you know, like, that's so cool. And I think, yeah, subconsciously, I just got attracted to Overwatch immediately because of that. Mm. It's kind of the same with like Magic the Gathering. I got into that last year. I had the cards when I was younger, but I never really played. And while I absolutely love building decks and all the mechanics in it, I love the diversity and the art of it. I didn't even realize, you know, there's so much of that kind of art, you know, medieval kind of whatever situation where it's all white people.
Is there like different, you know, decks of cards for the Magic the Gathering? Because I have no idea.
Oh, yeah. There are thousands and thousands of cards and you build the decks yourself.
Okay.
And the artwork in Magic the Gathering, even though if you're not interested in magic, just look up the artwork because it's beautiful. And it's monsters and vampires and dinosaurs and angels, all kinds of things. But the point is they're all so different and diverse and great. There's this just natural flow of, you can have cards that are from way, way back, and it's still this beautiful spectrum of creatures and humans and all kinds of stuff. And it's just inspiring. It's just nice to see. Mm. And so, yeah, I don't know. Overwatch is, I love the mechanics of it. I love playing it. It's one of my favorite games, probably because I've put so many hours into it. I recently passed 100 hours in Mercy. I'm very proud of that. I'm a really good Mercy player now. But I love the diversity of it. It's great. It's great that it's not only different races, but it's different countries and languages. And those are the small things that we need in order to, you know, make things better. It's funny when a lot of people, you know, you have the people who are like, you know, for some reason they think they can't relate to a woman or an LGBTQ person or a person of a different race. I just tell them, like, I grew up with white men my entire life, and they are still my heroes, and I got to relate to them, even though I'm the complete opposite. Mm. Die Hard with a Vengeance is one of my favorite movies, I guess, of action movies. I mean, I'm nothing like Bruce Willis in that, but hey, I love him. He's a cool guy. He's inspiring or whatever, right? And, you know, that's why I hope that, you know, that's the importance of diversity. Not only will you... There's no, like, if you tell a proper story, a human story, people will relate regardless to how a character looks. But it's going to be even better for the people who rarely see themselves to have, in addition to that, see someone who's like them too. And I think that's, like, such an important thing. And I hope and I love to see the fact that we are progressing with that, where it is, you know, we have more narratives now where it's, people are realizing you can relate to someone who doesn't look like you. But for sometimes it's also nice to see someone you can relate to who also looks like you or lives like you or has whatever it is as you, X like you, right? And so, yeah, I think Overwatch is such a good example of naturally including such a beautiful and diverse cast of characters that all have, you know, just the most incredible, just beautiful designs and their personalities. And also just, yeah. And there are other games that are coming out where, you know, protagonists are different than what we used to see them as. And it's just so nice because it's like, okay, so you can still relate to these characters, you know, like studios were worried about Black Panther for no reason because everybody likes Black Panther, you know, and as you know, someone who's half African, obviously it was a very special moment for me. Because Africa is very oftentimes in movies depicted as a place of, you know, sadness. It's a sad, you know, it's poor, it's war-ridden, whatever it may be in a movie. It was nice to see the beauty of Africa being put on such a big platform as Marvel and celebrated, you know, just the costumes themselves. I'm so happy that she won an Oscar for those because those costumes were such a celebration, you know, of the colorful and richness in Africa. And, you know, I'm so happy that young kids get to see that. And I think, you know, you underestimate the power, I think, of seeing someone who looks like you. I think a lot of people who've grown up with, you know, especially, I guess, white men who've grown up with seeing themselves all the time in a lot of media, I think they don't realize how insanely impactful it can be to see someone who in some shape or form, whether it be the gender or the sexual orientation or their color, see themselves like that is like so powerful because it means that you are worthy in whatever it is. And that was a long answer to, yes, I like Overwatch.
I don't mind the long answers. It's all good.
Oh, that's good. But I do like Overwatch a lot. And it's a fun, fun game.
Okay, so yeah. we're in games. Is there anything that you're looking forward to this fall, winter season for games?
Definitely Control and Death Stranding, probably on the top.
Gotcha.
I love a single player as much as I like Overwatch, but I also like single players. And so I'm all about, you know, cool stories and I mean, who knows what Death Stranding's about? I don't even know if Hideo knows what it's about, but I'm here for it. I love a good mystery. Let's see what this crazy thing is. You know, you see the trailer and Mutz making this smoking a cigarette, and I'm like, oh, that can be the entire game, and I'll play it, you know, right, as long as Mutz is in it. So, yeah, definitely those two. Weirdly, I'm excited to get a Switch Lite because I never got the Switch. So I'm excited to get that so I can revisit probably Ace Attorney. I love that game as a kid. But yeah, I think Control and Death Stranding are definitely top of the list right now. Obviously Cyberpunk in April is gonna be cool. Very, very excited about that.
Yeah.
And is it Ghostwire Tokyo? Is what it's called? Ghostwire Tokyo. Not sure when that's going to be coming out, but I remember from E3 that was like one of the things I remembered.
Was that Ubisoft?
And,
they were on stage for something, right? And then they showcased that or something like that, if I remember correctly.
let me just something do like a that. Google check.
Something like that. Look at you.
Yeah.
Journalistic integrity.
I'm so bad with like Ghost. It's not Ghost. I can't remember.
I think Ghost they did Wire. A presentation on stage for something.
It was Bethesda. I'm pretty sure it was Bethesda, but I don't want to say. See, I don't want to say things without being certain.
I know that. That's
yeah, it was Bethesda. Yeah, I don't like saying things like I don't like guessing. I guess that's journalistic integrity, but yeah.
Yeah, it is.
I don't like guessing. You gotta double check it.
That looks really interesting.
Ghostwire looks interesting, but I think for now those are probably. I guess Blair Witch is coming out this month, which would be might be cool.
Mm.
Although I say I'm interested in horror games, but. Play them because I know it's 5 years ago, literally almost to this date. But PT still scared me so much that I can't play horror games anymore. It's like actually sad.
Mm.
I played PT January 1st. That's the only reason why I remember when I first played it. The year it came out, or I guess technically the year after. It was January 1st. We were all super hungover from New Year's Eve. We were sitting on the couch and me and my friend decided we were going to play it. And what we didn't know is that the person who owned the PS4 had already started the game and then like left. So we jump in, 2 seconds in, and that girl jumps out. And I just felt my spirit left. We thought we'd have to like walk for a couple of minutes. We didn't know somebody started a game.
No.
And we just, oh my God, I've never been so scared in my life.
I can't do that.
And yeah. And then the second time we played it, I just then, but then the second time was with the editor of Game Reactor at the time. He was too afraid to play it, and we were like, you're the editor, you have to play it. So we sat there and we were all just horrified. It's like just a masterpiece, but it scared the living hell out of me. And so like it's so weird because I love it, but holy crap, holy crap, it's insane. I love that game, but I can never play a horror game again, so that's unfortunate.
I can't do it.
Yeah, I know. But it was beautiful.
Okay, last thing I have for you before we wrap up, and you've been amazing.
Oh, it's been nice talking, and thank you for letting me just babble on about all kinds of trash. My God.
Absolutely. Let's be friends forever. Okay.
Yes, agreed.
And in terms of, okay, so you're walking away from a person, but you want to leave them with a nugget of wisdom because you'll never see them again. What would you tell them?
I would say the best advice I can give you is to expect nothing and experience everything. That's the thing I used to tell myself. When you live in the present and you just have a look around from time to time and see things you're grateful for, like the beauty in the trees or, you know, how your skin is soft that day, or if you had a nice meal, I think life becomes really beautiful and just a great experience. I think it's so easy to expect things, positive or negative. And it's kind of like what I said with test doing, where I say I do my best and that's all I can do. Sometimes it's better to just experience stuff instead of expecting stuff, because you will be surprised or not surprised, no matter what. And so I try to live by that. Just experience things in a moment. I'm not expecting anything. I set goals for myself or intentions or manifestations, whatever you might call them. And then I walk on with my day and I try to be as present as possible and taking in whatever's happening around me. And I guess, you know, the words of wisdom, it's weird that, you know, the first initial thing would be just don't panic. Don't panic, man. It's a scary situation right now in the world. And I think we all just want to panic about everything seeming like it's falling apart. I guess don't panic would be my second words of wisdom. Just don't panic. Everything will be fine. It sounds wrong. And, you know, sometimes unfortunately is, but the only way to live a life where, regardless of what happens, you've got your inner peace, as much as that can naturally happen. I just say that because, you know, sometimes our brains chemically don't work as, you know, we want them to. But naturally, in our control, the the best thing we can do is to not just expect nothing and be present in the moment, because that is when, you know, you don't, you're not let down, basically, I guess. And, or like, that's not when you will react negatively to change. If you have no expectations of the road you're going to take to reach a goal, then you'll open yourself up to whatever roads may lie ahead. Kind of like me when I decided I'm not going to just pursue America by looking for a job. I opened myself up and I realized I want to go back to school. I'm going to school. That was a path I never expected I would go down. But once I let go of my expectation of how I would reach my goal, here I am reaching my goal because I'm working now and doing stuff that I love. And so I think experiencing the moment and staying positive and being loving to yourself, which means in return, you're going to open yourself up to love by others, and others will feel love for you and feel your love. I think it's such a cliche thing to say, but if you're good to yourself, you know, it's going to be easier for people to be good to you, and people will feel good around you. And I think that is something we definitely need in these times, is a sense of naive, childish sense of the world will be fine. Going back to the way millennials grew up on Barney the Dinosaur, and you can do whatever you want and believe in your dreams. And yeah, it feels like those moments are gone the moment our generation became adults, and the same people who made Barney told us that we're going to destroy your climate and also eat too much avocados. It feels like a betrayal. So the only thing we can do is just think back to Barney and be like, you know what? If I'm a better person, I'm doing something good in the world. Even if it is just saying, have a nice day to somebody, or asking somebody if they need help opening a door. And if you are good to yourself and good to others, you know, that's the way to live, I guess. I don't know. It's a weird, I don't know where I want to go with this. I guess my point is that living in the present and being good is easy. Mm. It's easier said than done, obviously, but in the end, it's just about letting go and having a look around. It's putting your phone down and just looking around, realizing what's going on in the world. I think there's a certain zen that comes with that, which makes life easy. It's easier to be grateful for where you are if you decide to stop for a moment and look around and see what you have. And people who do that will automatically feel better to be around, and they will automatically attract more goodness to them, I think. There's a reason why people like Will Smith is a guy who is just loved all over, because you can feel when he comes into a room that he is in the present, he is confident, he likes who he is as a person, and he wants nothing more than to spread good stuff out to the world. And if we all can like ourselves as much as Will Smith probably likes himself, we're just all going to be radiating creatures who are going to walk amongst each other and, you know, learn from each other and be positive and be open. So I don't know. That person would have probably left by now.
You know,
I try to get a nugget and he's like, I got to go make a phone call.
You say you don't know, but you know.
I know, but it's easier said than done. You know, I too existential crises and, you know, stand outside and just hate the world and like everybody else does. A sense of betrayal, a sense of like a feeling of betrayal from the boomers and all the older generations who told us that we would live a better world than them and here. And, you know, it feels like they betrayed us in a way, which is a very weird feeling. I guess that's more of a European thing, because like with Brexit, for example, which the majority who voted yes were not young people, right? I think 70% of people that are millennials and, you know, younger people voted no. And so that was like a definite betrayal of generations, right? And it's a weird feeling. And, you know, we have reason to be angry, but it's easy to say, but you got to just stay positive and got to stay in the moment. And I think, you know, you will feel good if you're good to others. That's not just like a thing. That's an actual fact. And it's, you know, there might not be a selfless act of good because it does feel good to do good. But, you know, it's a win-win, right? It's, yeah, they're very, I would argue, I remember there was a Friends episode where they told Phoebe, like, do one thing that's, like, selfless, but it can't make you feel good. And she had a hard time doing that because it feels good to do good things. It makes you feel nice inside to be nice. And, you know, but there's nothing wrong with that. So go do that. Be nice. Be more nice. It feels good. It feels great to be nice. Way better than going around and being angry all the time. But, I mean, I get that right now it's easy to be angry all the time because, oh my God, I am sometimes. But then I just got to stop and realize there are a lot of nice things in life, like palm trees and dogs and good people, good food.
Right.
And, you know, The Sims.
Right.
Exactly. So, yeah. Right.
Right, I had high expectations for this conversation. and you surpassed them. So,
really?
So thank you. Yeah, absolutely.
I always worry that I babble. I feel like sometimes my thoughts just ramble into the beyond, and they probably do.
I actually like that because I think we have a lot to share, and sometimes we don't get the space to do that.
Yeah, that's very true.
And so I thank you for really taking the time to, you know, hopefully we'll talk again. You know,
absolutely. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. And where can they find you? We'll do those things, those plugs. So where are you now?
So I'm on Twitter at it's Sophia H, Sophia with an F. Yeah, ITSSOFIAH. My website is linked on my Twitter where it's like the, you know, the classic boring stuff, you know, the portfolios and the, I'm currently fixing my gallery. So I get some of my photography up there, which would be nice because I like sharing my photography and I haven't. I am Swordfish Kiss on Twitch. I don't usually use Twitch anymore. Maybe I should do more Twitch stuff. Also on Instagram, if I ever once in a blue moon will return to the scary Instagram, who knows? I mean, I will probably return, but don't expect selfies because they don't exist anymore. Maybe I'll do a picture of a cute dog because, oh my God, I hang out in Venice a lot and there are so many cute dogs that one of these days I'm going to be brave enough to stop someone and be like, listen, I need to take a picture of a cute dog because the internet needs more cute dogs.
Right.
But yeah, I guess that's what I have to plug. There are a lot of things I can't talk about, so I can't talk about those, but yeah, I'm working on stuff, hustling hard, trying to make things happen. And Twitter will probably be where I talk about those things first. And I love to talk to people and connect and learn about their ideas. So that'd be a good place to do that.
Thanks so much for coming. I appreciate that.
Thank you so much for having me.